Q-List, brought to you by Same Same But Black. This is a group of queer conversations with members of our community speaking to their music, literary, and artistic tastes. Conversations from around the world and globally. The Q-List, presented by Same Same But Black, and I'm your presenter, Michelle.
Welcome to Q-List 2022. I'm Michelle from Same Same But Black, and today we're talking to Mucka. Would you like to introduce yourself? Let's talk about your Q-List and why, but first, let's start with an introduction from Mucka, one of the foremost people in our community making a change, participating. Participation is everything in our community.
I'll take it. I'll take change maker. I'll take bad bitch. I'll take anything. But thank you so much for having me, Michelle. My name is Mucka Nucka, but you can call me Mucka. And I guess a lot of my work or practice flows in the intersections of embodied self-care, collective wellness, and social justice. So my whole entire zhuzh is around, you know, journeying to a space where we can think about our well-being and wellness holistically. So, you know, from a social justice perspective and also from like an embodied perspective and returning back into our sovereign bodies and selves and really strengthening that relationship and with each other. So, yeah, that's, I guess that's me in a nutshell.
That's a massive achievement. And so young. We're just going to say, Mucka still plays with youth on her side, unlike some of us who are very youth adjacent. Anyway, moving into our selection, I just want to ask you a question. Let's talk about your Q-List and why. And how difficult was it for you to make your choices?
It was really hard, but I was so excited when I saw the prompts, because I was like, oh, this is exciting, and it's a nice different format to sort of speak to things and to share stories. So it was hard. I think the books, the songs, and the artists were really hard to choose. So I kind of just chose what was at the top of my mind at that time. And then with films, I kind of struggled a bit because I'm not really a screen person. I'm more of a book type of gal. So the films were a little bit difficult to come to. But with everything else, I just kind of thought, what has had the biggest impact on me at different stages in my life? And with those things that have had an impact on me, I also picked things that still had an impact. So the impact was still ongoing. So that's just kind of how I arrived to my Q-List.
Okay, let's move straight into the first part of the Q-List, or the order that I chose, not necessarily the first. Let's choose books. And a really interesting selection. We kicked off with Sister Outside by Audre Lorde. Do you want to speak to that? And also maybe mention a couple of the other books that you chose.
Yeah, sure thing. So I picked Sister Outsider by Audre Lorde because, I don't know, Audre Lorde is just phenomenal and incredible. The blueprints, the words that she left for us still speak to this time. There's some moments when I read some of her essays in Sister Outsider, for instance, the letter that she wrote to Mary Daly. I remember reading that in 2020, and I was like, to my partner, I was like, she wrote this shit in 1950. Like, what the heck? So I think her work is so phenomenal because it's timeless, it speaks to now, but it also carries on a strong storytelling tradition that Black queer women have always had, where we don't just speak in the singular or in the present, but we're able to pull in the past and speak to those in the future. So that's why I really love Sister Outsider, the essays in there and the speeches that are in there. The one that's had the biggest impact on me is The Uses of the Erotic. The Erotic is Power. That changed how I looked at power first of all, in the first instance, I started seeing power as the agency that I had and the choices that I had that I could make, and actually feel that I do have power. It also, I guess, solidified this idea that, you know, not everything has to be a struggle. We have choices that we can make through centering our pleasure, through centering, you know, the things that feel good to us, through centering things like truth, play, creativity, and how those spaces can become springboards of how we can be in better relationship with each other, but also, you know, the world. So that's Sister Outsider. And then the second book I chose was Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe. Love, love, love Chinua Achebe, West African author, Nigerian to be specific. My dad gave me a copy of this book when I was 17 to read. You know, I don't think I was the easiest teenager around, but anyway, who is? We all have our moments. And I was really going through an identity crisis, you know, being raised in New Zealand, after living in a country like Zimbabwe for 10 years. So I already had a solid understanding of who I was. So to be uprooted from one place into another really, really shook my core and my experience. So when he gifted me Things Fall Apart to read, it was like a connection of the thread of how life for us looked like in pre-colonial times. It opened up this other imagination, this other part of my mind that reminded me that, you know, there is things to Blackness or to Africanness that were there prior to all these disruptions and interruptions. And that tickled my interest in wanting to discover, you know, ancestral ways of being, ancestral healing modalities, and just really sinking deeper into what the truth of our history from our perspective looks and feels like. So that was a game changer. I was 17. And then Nervous Conditions by Tsitsi Dambare Mbwa. She's also a Zimbabwean. This book is incredible and it speaks kind of to like third culture identity, but also identity of women who were living in the village during the time that she wrote, that she set this book in. I love this book. I first read it when I was about 15, and then I read it again sometime last year. And the differences between what I picked out when I was 15 and last year, I just fast. And again, she's one of those authors that really help you to situate, you know, who you are as a Zimbabwean, but also kind of speak to the different experiences that our country, our soil, our people, and our women have specifically been through. So those are my three books. Yeah. Hard to pick, but we ended up with these three.
They're an excellent collection. Many of us haven't had the opportunity to read. So books have influenced you. How, moving to the songs in your cue list, what impacts have these songs had on you, and why did you choose them, and do they reflect a certain timeline in your life?
Yes and no. So I think when I received your email, I had been listening to Loved By You by Kirby. It's one of my favorite songs to sing along to. So do not ever make the mistake of playing the song around me, because I will literally tap into background singer mode. I will be helping Kirby harmonize. Whether or not it sounds good, that's that's what I do. So I really love that song. The place she was singing from, you can really feel it in your guts. It's also about love. I love love. You know, I've always been a sucker for love. You know, I'm a hopeful romantic. So there's just something about it. Then that line when she says, I know that heaven ain't easy to get to. The closest I'll get is being right next to you. Oh, listen, my little heart just like glowers with it. So I love, love, love that song. And Kirby has an incredible voice. So I think I just love that song for the sake of loving it. I love her vocal range. I love the way the instrumentation is almost background to it, but it also guides the song. So there's just something about it. And then Yamor by Salif Keita reminds me of, you know, being younger and like, you know, growing up in a place like Zimbabwe, and you knew that like on Saturdays or Sundays when you heard, actually it was Saturdays for us because Sundays was church, when you heard music playing, you knew it was time to clean, or you know, to at least move out the way so that the adults could start cleaning. And while my parents didn't necessarily play Salif Keita, when I got older and I moved into my own space, something about the instrumentation and the sound of Yamor reminded me of that time. So I just love it. And Salif Keita is a legend, just absolute legend. And again, that song is about love. So, you know, when I play it, I'm reminded of, you know, that innocence of childhood, of really when you love so freely and the world is just the world's just beautiful and expansive. But also when I play it and I hear it, I think of my partner and the kind of world and space that we are creating for each other that is expansive and creating new traditions and pathways. So there's something about that song. And then the last one by Richie Spice, which is The World is a Cycle. I was raised on a diet of reggae and gospel. So on Sundays, we play soul or reggae in this household. And I just love the message behind that song. There's just so many things that Richie Spice puts in that song. So for instance, there's a line where he says, in everything you do, remember to pray. You know, a prayer a day keeps the evil away. And that's true. I'm someone who really believes in prayer and meditation and all of those things. But also I think he just speaks to how the world is just this ongoing loop and how we need to be grounded in love and care for each other. So yeah, that's why I love that song, because of the messaging in it.
That's a beautiful connection to those selections of songs. That's quite inspiring. Quite inspiring. So we moved swiftly into the artists, and I noticed that you selected Miriam McCabe and Solange Knowles, and I was curious to find out, there's such diverse ends of the spectrum. Explain your selection for me and other people, and for people that aren't quite sure of who these people might be. I think it's quite important to understand the timeline that Miriam McCabe sits in and Solange sits in.
So Miriam is in that, you know, anti-apartheid time. She's, you know, 60s type timeline. And I just love Miriam McCabe, you know, just love everything she stood for, the kind of woman she was. You know, she could get up there and sing her ass off, dance her ass off, make you feel something. And then she could also stand up and like speak to politics and denounce the apartheid government. I mean, she was exiled from South Africa and home for a long, long time. And I cannot imagine what that did to her spirit and her psyche, especially as somebody who was so connected to the place and loved the place. And then she was a fearless lover. You know, you hear her in Yuma Sekele's love story, you hear her moving to America, leaving him, getting with Stokely Carmichael, her and Stokely Carmichael, you know, becoming this power couple overnight that the US government is scared of. So then they flee and they live in West Africa. And then when she gets to West Africa, she dates this, I think it was like a prime minister or member of parliament or something. So her life was rich and colorful. And I love it because, you know, sometimes when you look at some people, you're like, okay, if you're an artist, you stay in this box. If you're an activist, you stay in this box. If you're going to be a free lover, you sit in this box. But it's her life story really illustrated that those boxes are all constructions and that we are fluid beings and that we can be all things at once. And she's a fashion icon. Like, you know, before I was trying to get my locks back in again, I loved getting my hair braided like her. The auntie who's done my hair for a long time knows that anytime I come to the salon and I have a hairstyle in mind, it's going to be a photo of Miriam's hairstyle. So I just loved all those things about her. So that was her timeline. And then we have Solange Knowles, who's more of an artist of like our time. And I think what I love about Solange is, I think similar things where it's like Solange has jumped from genre to genre. You know, she had that Tony era. And then she gave us A Seat at the Table. And then I think she had like a reggae-ish phase prior as well. And then now she has this whole experiential phase. And I mean, I shouldn't call them phase because that's boxing an artist. But again, it's that fluidity of I'm in this particular time and space and I'm inspired by this particular thing. So I'm not going to restrict myself by fitting into a genre or whatever category my audience thinks I'm in. I'm going to make what I feel like making and expressing at the time. And then if I so feel inclined to move on in a couple of years, I will do so. I think that's also the thing. So I think the connection between the two of them, it's just this this commitment to dying to the world almost and being authentic to self. And I feel like that's that's so beautiful. You know, there's just something so inviting about that, especially in a world that really, really tries to box us and, you know, further put us into particular defined spaces. So I think that's the connection between those two and why I love them. And Solange is also a fashion icon.
And then we move to your films. A great collection. And so these films are from totally different types of cinematic experiences and really interesting choice. Because it's a really interesting choice of cinema techniques. Why did you choose Black Girls? I'm really interested to find why you chose Black Girls.
Oh, Osun Asimbene is an incredible cinematographer. And I loved Black Girl because I remember when I first watched the film, something in me clicked, you know, watching her move from Senegal into France and the treatment she got. It's almost like she went, he had this way of showing it with like not as much words, and he wasn't even using color, it was black and white, but you could tell the way in which when she was in Senegal there was something alive about her and to the fore. And then once she got to France, it was like she was there but she had been disappeared and was in the background. And I really, really loved the way that was said in a few words, but not. And I think the story really speaks honestly to the migration dream, where you move from one country to another, thinking you're moving into the land of milk and honey, only to arrive there and be completely dehumanized. And apart from dehumanization, you're also really lonely and isolated from the things and people that were familiar to you. And so in the end, and I won't, this is a spoiler, I won't say it, but you know, once you get to the end, it's quite a, you know, shocking type of ending, but you're like, what other choice do people in those circumstances really have when you are faced by being in a different country, being dehumanized? And I think the dehumanization wasn't even like, because sometimes we expect, when we talk about dehumanizing people, we think, oh, yelling at them, calling them the N-word across the street, you know, violently attacking them. But it was like those real subtle things, or the things that we call subtle, or that we call microaggressions, that slowly chew at you as a person. And I think Dr. Ray Johnson has this beautiful way of speaking to microaggressions by calling them 1,000 paper cuts. So we see her experiencing 1,000 paper cuts to the point where it's like she's completely just broken and shattered. So there was something about the way that he told that story and the cinematic style that he chose that really, because I think it's about 15 minutes, but it's a really powerful film. So that's why I chose it. The storytelling was, but I think going back to Osman Simbene, I think the reason why he's so prolific and so influential on so many Black filmmakers now is because he made his films from a particular space. There's this famous quote by him, or one of the most beautiful things he said, because he says a lot of beautiful things, was around him being the son and him trying to move away from, you know, the West, the American and European influence on being the center. So I kind of feel like, you know, him and Toni Morrison had similar conversation or kōrero around, you know, their worlds being the center. So when you watch films like Black Girl, they don't feel as voyeuristic as some films do, where you're watching it and you're like, why does this feel off, you know, because it's centering a particular audience, a particular locale, but because he's centering himself, his experience, and maybe aspects of the Black experience, because the Black experience isn't a monolith, you're able to connect to something deeper, because you're like, oh, actually this person's speaking from a particular space and time that's rooted in who he is and not as an outsider in any way. So I think that's really beautiful and powerful.
What memories and flashbacks do you have when you relate to some of this music and books now in your current timeline? So these were things that you listened to in your past, and how do they relate to your now timeline?
To my now timeline, because I think with the books, I can definitely, especially with the books, I can point out the years and times when I when I read those books and what I was moving through. And in each of them, I can see, I don't want to say construction of myself, because I guess we don't really construct ourselves. We return back to who we were. So I think in each of those books and each of those timelines, a part of myself that I reclaimed in reading them, that's now a part of who I am in this moment in time. So that's how I connect, knowing that they've had this influence on me and shifted something in me and removed something in me that's now helped me to arrive to the space in which I am who I am right now. Yeah.
That's eloquently said. Yeah, I knew you were a wordsmith. That's something that's not me. I'm really interested in how important do you think these conversations are in relation to Aotearoa and the Q-List?
I think these conversations are really important because it's a different way of getting to know each other. So one of the first reasons is I am eternally bored by the "where are you from? How long have you been here?" narrative. Like, Jesus Christ, like, Black people aren't new in this country. You know, we've been here and we've got other stories outside of our migration here, or necessarily our experiences here. You know, we are memory banks of so many histories, of so many books, of so many stories. And I feel like it's important to speak from that lens because it allows us to share aspects of ourselves that sometimes mostly get ignored by media because they're not trauma porn. You know what I mean? So I think these conversations are important because we're not just these people that lend voices when it's time of crises, or when white people have discovered that racism is well and truly alive in the 21st century. So I think they're really important. Secondly, I think they're important because, so with a lot of my programs and workshops that I offer, most of the reading or learning material is coming from my center. So it's mostly queer, Black authors or artists, or any material that I share, it is Blackity, Black. And I think that's so important because when we're thinking about, you know, theories, or we're thinking about even, for example, you know, filmmakers and everything else, we don't think about Black folk. We're mostly, a lot of the material that we're asked to read or to listen to is washed down content that, you know, white folk have picked up into pieces and put into something else. So I think when we have programs like the Q-List that ask us, you know, what books, songs, and artists do we most connect to in films, we have an opportunity to be like, there's actually a whole world out there outside of white literature, outside of white music, outside of that lens. So it also allows the opportunity for us to share our center, to share where our scholarship comes from. I noticed this thing when I have conversations with people, there's this assumption that we're speaking about the same thing, or because I've lived in New Zealand most of my life, that, you know, I'm watching and listening to the same things. And the reality is I'm not, because I'm not off this place. This space isn't catered to those literally needs. So I tap into where I'm from, I tap into my own tradition. So it's an opportunity to expand people's perspective on what's available to them. So that's why I really love the prompts. I was like, oh, this is gonna be fun. I was like, yes, I've made it. Someone's asking me about those books, songs, and artists and films I'm listening to, not asking me to talk about race. And then in terms of my hopes and my dreams, I think my biggest hope and dream, ever since tapping deeper into like a yogic practice and everything else, is for everyone to breathe easy. Like, I knew that we weren't, as people, that we don't breathe so-called properly, because there's just so much that's happened to our bodies and there's so much happening with our nervous systems. And so when I started tapping into these practices and everything else, I was like, holy shit, like, we really, really are not breathing properly and we're disconnected from our breath. So I think, yeah, my hope and my dream is for everyone to breathe easy. And I know that people will begin to breathe easy when they're equitable outcomes. Because, you know, breathing easy isn't just sitting on a yoga mat for 5 hours and doing your chants and everything else. It's also having access to healthcare, having access to food, having access to to resources that will help you flourish and thrive, however you define that. So I think when I think about breathing easy, it's not only about having a connection to our breath and letting our whole body breathe. It's also about understanding that for people to breathe easy, they need to be equitable outcomes. So that's my big hope and dream for the children. I don't know if I'm going to see it in my lifetime, but I sure as hell hope the kids see a slithering, a slithering off it.
Got one more thing, and this is really an open question for you to make a statement if you wish to. Is there anything you'd like to add?
I think I would say that it's okay to choose you in this moment, no matter how hard it may be, because ultimately, like, it's going to be okay. Because I think there's a part that we don't necessarily have conversations out loud about, we might have them between us, is that when you do come out, when you're going in the process of coming out, there's a lot of grieving that happens. A lot of grieving. Not only are you dying to the self that you've sort of, you know, been playing all along for your relational and emotional safety, but also there's a part of you that's dying to the people that you knew. And they're also, sometimes if they decide to stay on the journey with you or to go, there is a lot of death and rebirth happening in that process. And I think sometimes for the first year and a half of my coming out, I just had this massive anxiety, but I still felt pressure to show up. I still felt pressure to be who people always knew me as. But the reality is, I just wasn't anymore, you know. So it took really knowing that actually I can shut all the shit down for a couple of months and just sit in my cocoon, give my body the time and mind and time and space to integrate, to grieve, to lose my mind and to choose myself. And then, you know, when I'm ready to be out again, around people and everything else, I'm able to be in relationship with them or build a new relationship or a new way of relating, based on that groundedness. Because I think there is a lot of pressure on queer folk where it's like, okay, cool, you've come out, but you still have to be that person that we've always known you as. And it's like, that's impossible. You know, by coming out, you're shedding this, I felt like I removed this big old skin suit. Like, sometimes I'll be in meditation, I'll feel like I've ripped off this big jacket off me. And it's like, you've taken something off you. So I think my word would be, it's okay to choose yourself. It's okay to really ask yourself, what sort of life do I want to live? What kind of experiences do I want to have? What kind of friends do I want to have? How do I want to feel? And then move on with your life based on that and leave everything else, because people will try and guilt trip you to stay the same so that you can keep playing that role that they've become accustomed to you in your life. Or people will be startled by your change, but it's not about them or their expectations. It's about you and your journey. And the beautiful thing about when we do things like that, while they may be really, really hard and harrowing, you will find your people. You know, we're out there, we're here, you know, we've got you. There are people out there who intimately understand that experience. So you're also not alone in that journey of choosing yourself and saying, you know, if you to everything else that's not serving your journey. So yeah, I think that's my word for this Sunday.
And thank you, Marka, for doing this cue list.
No, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And thank you for building this space. So thank you so much for having me. My name is Makanaka, and this was my cue list.
That was amazing. Thank you for taking the time to have this conversation and talking to us about your cue list. Thank you for listening to the cue list. It can be found on www.samesamebutblack.co.nz, IG, Facebook, and all other social media platforms.